Welcome to Cleveland Clinic Health Talk Podcasts, featuring presentations by leading Cleveland Clinic physicians and medical experts. Today's speaker, Michelle Angie, presents strategies for coping with incontinence.
Okay, can you hear me? Is this a good voice? All right. Well, thank you all for coming. This is Essentials for Aging, and I'm talking about incontinence, but incontinence is not a normal part of aging, but it's something, unfortunately, that a lot of men and women as they age experience. And so I'm going to talk about the different types, you know, what normal urination should be, the different types of incontinence, and how we can hopefully fix most of those problems for you. Let's see, space bar, there we go. Okay, so urinary incontinence is when you lose your urine and you don't want to. It can be a small little amount or a large amount. Sometimes it's preceded just by a real strong urge, you know, that's almost difficult to control, and that can lead to incontinence maybe later on. Like I said, it's not natural, but it occurs maybe because of some of the other things that happen during the aging process. Both men and women, maybe a little more women usually than men, both. And just like it says here, about 42% of women can have this. Sometimes, depending on what you read, you know, it can be less than that, but it can be a large amount of people. So first you want to understand what normally happens. So your bladder is like a balloon that as the urine comes in there, it just slowly fills, and then when you urinate, it empties and it collapses again. As it fills up, it sends messages to your spine that tell your brain, hey, I'm full. And you're gonna say, well, this isn't a good place. I'm in the middle of this talk now. I'm gonna wait a little bit longer. So my brain tells my spine to tell my bladder to wait, and it can do that. If there's a miscommunication in there somewhere, something's wrong with your brain or your spinal cord, you know, MS, Parkinson's, strokes, things like that, that communication can go off somewhere. And even though I'm saying, hold it, hold it, hold it, the bladder just does its own thing and lets it go. So if there's anything different in there, you know, it can lead to incontinence. Normally it's about half full when you start to say that, yeah, I could probably go, and you have a good warning signal that gives you enough time to make arrangements to get to the bathroom. So things that happen as you age are things like you actually produce a little more urine at night than during the day. That can happen from a variety of reasons. Your veins don't constrict as well, and you keep water in your like lower limbs during the day, and it comes out easier at night. Your heart doesn't pump as well. Your kidneys don't filter as well. You have a hormone that concentrates the urine at night that doesn't work as well as you age, and for other reasons. The women, they lose estrogen. It changes how the urethra is shaped and causes irritation. Those kind of things can lead to incontinence. Men, their prostates get large, compressing that urethra that you urinate through, and then they can't get all the urine out, so it comes out in little bits or without as good control. Snoring, sleep apnea, those actually cause a lot of the nighttime trouble with urination because it keeps that person almost awake when they're snoring. They don't get that deep sleep. They're more aware of their bladder. They're actually producing more urine. You know, so there's different things that happen to you as you age that cause that incontinence to happen. So there's different types of incontinence. Just because one person tries one thing, it doesn't mean it's going to work for something else. Stress incontinence is, it's not mental stress, but it's stress on the bladder. So if it's laughing, coughing, sneezing, anything that might put pressure on the bladder and cause that urine to squirt out. You have a muscle down below that should hold it nice and tight, the sphincter, and if that pressure above is too hard or that muscle's too weak, it's just going to open up and let the urine come out. Tends to be more women than men who have this problem, mostly because the tube we urinate through, the urethra is only about this long in a woman, whereas in a man it's like this. Many women have had babies, and that tends to kind of push everything down and loosen everything up, and the urethra gets a little shorter, and it's easier for the urine to get out of a space this big than it is that big. And different things, well, we'll talk about what can help that a little later. Men will have some stress incontinence. That's more, though, if they've had a surgical procedure that might have messed up some of the nerves, like if their prostate was removed, then they can have stress incontinence, too. Overactive bladder is another thing, like urgency. You see a lot of commercials on TV for the meds for these kind of this type of incontinence. It's that sudden urge to go. You might get a little warning signal. It might give you enough time to get there. It might be just instantaneous. You're fine and you go to get up from your chair, and it's like, I gotta go, and you're running to get there. This is both men and women. It can be a little bit of leakage. It can be the whole bladder. and mixed incontinence, a combination of both. A lot of our women come in with both. They leak if they laugh, cough, sneeze. They have the urgency. Try to figure out which is more bothersome and focus on one. And there's not too many things that really fix both. Overflow isn't as common. That's when the bladder is super full and it just can't empty because there's something below it that's bothering it, so it just leaks a little over. I always call it like water over a dam. They've got this full bladder of urine and they just keep leaking little and little, keeps coming out until because they can't get it all out, so it's just enough to give them some relief. That's usually, a lot of times that's the men with the large prostates. Functional incontinence, that's when it's really just the way you're moving. You know, it's a very slow, someone who can't get out of a bed, they use a walker, there's things in the way, there's just something that won't let them get to the bathroom, but they would have good control if everything around them was working well. So dealing with the types of incontinence depends on what the cause is. Each is very different. So stress incontinence is your anatomy. There's that lack of pelvic floor strength down there to hold that urine up in place. So simple things, I always like to do behavior and simple things first, and then we do medicine, and then we try to do surgeries. But for the stress incontinence, you want to do some sort of exercise. So just like there's physical therapy for your back or your shoulder, there's very specific physical therapy for your pelvic floor. At the clinic, we have several down at main campus. There's probably about 7 of them, I think, and at Hillcrest, and then one of the outlying areas, I can't remember. But they specialize in that. These aren't the people you're going to see for your back. They just specialize on the pelvic floor area. A lot of muscles down there, and they really teach you how to help control them so that you can control that urge or that leaking, when you cough and sneeze. After that, there isn't a lot of good medicines for stress incontinence. Sometimes we'll use things off-label, means they're intended for one thing, but we might use them for something different. So there are some drugs, like I think Cymbalta there, tends to tighten that up. So we've used that for certain men after surgeries. Not for women, though. We don't use that. But there's not a good drug specifically for that. Surgical repair isn't often a way that we treat that, either with meshes, slings, things that give that little bit more support back to the muscle so that it just tight enough to hold it when you cough or sneeze, but not too tight so that you can urinate on your own. Most of those are very outpatient surgeries. I know there's been a lot on the news about meshes and erosions and things, and everyone's experience is always different, but the majority of people really do very well with it. Weight loss can help that, because just like anything pushing on your bladder, if you've got less belly fat when you're coughing or sneezing, it's going to be less weight pushing on that bladder, squirting the urine out. So even like a 10% body weight loss will help reduce stress incontinence. A pessary for women, what a pessary is, it's a little rubber disc that gets folded up and put up into the vagina, and it kind of holds things up in place there. So if the uterus is falling down or the bladder is falling down, it's a non-surgical option to push things up, and sometimes that pressure will go on the urethra just right so that they don't leak urine. And there's some new things that you may have seen on TV. There's a urethral insert. That's a prescription item where you actually put almost a little plug in the urethra. I've heard of it. I'm not sure how I'm going to like that. And there's vaginal inserts, too. That's made by the people who make Poise, where they're telling you there's something you can put up in the vaginal area and kind of cause compression on the urethra is really what it is. Urgency. So that's that strong urge to go. Might make it, might not. The biggest thing of that is bladder irritants. Caffeine, alcohol, spicy foods, and acidic foods. So when someone comes in and tells me they drink 2 pots of coffee and they can't understand why they can't get to the bathroom, it's like, that's your big thing here, you know? So even though you may have been able to tolerate 3-4 cups of coffee in the morning when you were in your 30s, you know, in your 50s it's a little more irritating, in your 70s it just really bothers the bladder and you can't handle it. So switching to decaf, increasing water intake, you know, so that you're not having so many irritants, those kind of things help. It's a lot of triggers for that, the urgency. So many people will tell me, I'm fine, I'm driving in the car. As soon as I put my foot outside the door of my car, I gotta go. I put my key in the door, I gotta go. I hear water running, I gotta go. So there's triggers. So those are things that you can kind of control ahead of time. You know you're gonna put your foot outside that door, so you gotta, you know, work on those pelvic floor exercises that you might have been taught, or you know, urinate before you leave somewhere so you know you have got the little extra time. Bladder training, again, physical therapy can teach you that. We can work on that where you just time the urination so you beat the signal. If you know you're going to have to go by 3 hours, then always urinate at 2.5 and kind of extend that time as you go. And again, the pelvic floor exercises. That's for the behavior for the urgency. That's the one where there's a lot of medicines. There's a whole group. The first like six of them are ones that have been around a long, long time. They, well, all of them, even the last one, kind of calm and relax the bladder. The first six have been around for ages. There's still a few that are branded, but most of them are generic. They do have side effects of dry mouth, dry eyes, constipation. That last one, Myrbetriq, you'll see ads for that on TV. It's a little bladder pulling a lady around the town. That works a little different. It comes in a different way. Doesn't have those side effects like the first ones have. So, you know, for some people that's much better, because if you've got a lot of issues with constipation or dry eyes or dry mouth and teeth problems, that can be really difficult. And the Myrbetriq's good. It's just it's a little pricey, you know. Some more and more insurances are covering it. So we work on that when we can. And then if those things don't work, and you've tried at least three meds, you've tried all of the behavior things, there's just something going on, or you've got a lot of neurologic issues that, you know, the meds just can't compensate for, there are a little more invasive options. Botox is something that, you know, they use for cosmetic purposes for wrinkles. So they can inject that in the bladder. Just like you need on your face, you would need repetitive treatments, but they inject it into the bladder, it calms and relaxes it, so it takes away that urge. Sometimes it relaxes it too much that you can't go, but you know, you use a catheter and then it kind of fades away, but something to consider. InterStim is a little, I don't know if any of you know what a TENS unit is for pain. So an InterStim is sort of like that. It's a little pacemaker size unit that's put in underneath the skin of your hip, and there's little wires that go into your spine, and it kind of interrupts the signal between that gotta go and your brain, and it kind of lets your bladder be calm. And posterior tibial nerve stimulation is where we use a tiny little acupuncture type needle, and it goes right in the like behind the ankle, like down in here, and it just sits there. You come in the office, you sit there for a half hour with this little needle in your ankle. It sends little electrical pulse signals to your nerve that kind of interrupt that signal to your brain, again from the bladder. It's training your bladder, and that one is once a week for 12 weeks and then just like once a month, and that kind of helps calm it too. The overflow, the person who can't empty it, you want to put a catheter in or teach them how to use a catheter. That's definitely a little more of an issue there. Functional, you know, there's things you can do if there's a loved one you have that has trouble. You know, pick up the rugs off the floor. Consider getting a urinal closer to the bed or a potty chair. You know, something simple like that might help prevent some incontinence. Constipation is huge. That's a big part of aging too. Constipation can, well, it's defined as less than 3 bowel movements a week. It doesn't have to be every day, but it can place pressure on the bladder, making it feel like you gotta go. Just like someone pushing from the front, but it's kind of from other areas. And it can also impinge a nerve that makes it more difficult for you to empty. So relieving constipation helps. And nighttime urination, nocturia, is a, you know, major complaint for a lot of our patients, and that's getting up, you know, one or more times during the night. And we kind of expect that to happen, as I said earlier. Once you're in your 70s, we expect you to get up maybe twice at night. You can't always make it zero, but when someone's telling me 4 or 6 times, that's not normal. So we look at a lot of the different things like the snoring and different medicines and what time they eat and drink and what time they take their diuretic pill. You know, but a lot of times if your legs are swollen at night and they're skinny in the morning, well, all that fluid comes out at night, so you got to get those legs up in the evening. After dinner, put your legs up higher than your heart for 30 minutes to an hour. That'll get some of that fluid out before you go to bed, and then you might get up one less time at night. And a sleep study if needed. If snoring's an issue and restless leg movements and all that kind of stuff, a sleep study can help you figure out what's going on at night. And that's about it.
Thank you for listening to Cleveland Clinic Health Talk Podcasts. For more information, please visit our website at clevelandclinic.org/health.